Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last November, Christopher Coyne, Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington, joined us from his office in the diocese to talk about the synod the diocese had been conducting for over a year. A synod calls on members of the church to establish a plan for the future of the church. The Burlington Diocese asked its members what the church was doing well and what it could be doing better. During our interview, the bishop discussed the work of a committee of lay people reviewing the files of diocesan clergy to look for any allegations of child sexual abuse.
They've already started their work. In fact, right now in the building, there's one of the volunteers, one of the guys that's here, and he's just looking at file after file. And it's a lot of work, but they'll issue a report. I told them it's going to be their report. It's not going to be, I'll just issue it in their name. I will follow their recommendation. If you're going to bring lay folk to the table to do the work, you got to let them do their job. And just continue to say that we're committed to 100% turning the page and doing everything that we can to make sure this never, never, never happens again.
Well, the work of that committee is complete, and the report was formally released to the public this morning. And joining us now is a member of that committee, John Mahoney, and the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington, Christopher Coyne. Thanks to both of you for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Jane.
So, John Mahoney, can you talk a little bit about the scope of what you were charged with doing and what the group of this committee of lay people has been going through to just try to figure out what you were releasing and what a credible accusation means and then whose names are revealed?
We were presented with a great number of files, and early on in our discussions, we determined that we needed to come up with what would be our standard for a credible allegation and looking at what some other dioceses had done. We decided that the standard set by the Diocese of Syracuse was one that we would use, and then we began our work.
And what you were looking for were natural, plausible, and probable accusations corroborated with other evidence or another source or acknowledged or admitted to by the accused?
At least one of those three standards had to be met, yes.
Bishop Coyne, why? Why was it necessary or important to release a list of names of priests who'd been accused of abusing children?
Well, I mean, first of all, John himself approached me as someone who's a victim survivor back when I first got here 4.5 years ago and urged me to publish the list. He said that the name of his abuser had never been made public, even though there had been a settlement, and that there were other names out there that were not made public, and that any of the names that were out there were done in a haphazard way in the sense of they were under through litigation, through this discovery. But in no place was there a list that someone who had been abused could go to see that there's an acknowledgement that this man had done wrong and that they could be at peace knowing that he was not in ministry anymore, that he's not going to be hurting other children. When John first approached me, I wasn't in favor of it because I'd seen that in other places that no matter what you do, there are going to be people going to say that the list is incomplete, that it's a cover-up, that it's all done by church people, all those other things. So I decided finally, after hearing from John again and others, to say, okay, we need to do this, and also to look at the fallout from the Pennsylvania grand jury where, you know, if you don't disclose, somebody else is going to disclose it for you. So I said, if this is going to work, we have to give this independent committee complete independence, complete access to all of our files, and complete trust and ability to make the report and to make these things present for us. And that's what we did, and they did a great job. They put an incredible amount of work and time into it.
John Mahoney, why was it important to you to have the names of accused priests be public in this way?
I think we say in our statement that that there may be many victims who have suffered silently, and that to at least have an acknowledgement, a public acknowledgement, might offer some consolation for some victims or maybe the family and friends of a victim who might even be deceased. So,
the priest who abused you is named in this. Does it offer you that kind of solace?
I've been working with this for an awful long time. And I think what especially offers me consolation is that having this person's name public is offering consolation to others, because I know I was not the only victim of this particular individual.
Why does seeing that name out there, do you think, give that kind of confirmation or confidence in for victims or provide? I mean, because it could also re-traumatize, certainly re-trigger families who have maybe tried not to think about this for a long time. So, you know, why is that? Why is just having the name public? Because you don't list what they're accused of. You don't list the dates, the locations, the names of victims, certainly. But you list the names of the priests.
I think this is a discussion that we had with the bishop, and it was the case, and we understand the other side that there may be some re-traumatizing, but we felt that we needed to err on the side of offering some consolation to those victims who maybe had never come forward.
Jane, I offered the analogy of a family secret. With the church as a big family, and how families can get together, and there's that family secret that nobody talks about. There may have been that abusive uncle, and the women who he abused who might be in the room. And when you start to talk about the uncle, everybody goes, oh, remember Uncle Charlie? He was such a great guy. And then they kind of, and then maybe if they start to say, yeah, but no, well, let's not talk about that, you know? And so what happens is if you don't have a name out like Ed Foster, who was John's abuser, people could say, well, remember Father Foster, he was wonderful. But then the victims are sitting there and they're thinking like, well, can I even talk about this? I don't feel that he was wonderful. So I think these family secrets need to be aired.
Well, you know, even this morning, one of my colleagues said, you know, I'm looking at this list of names and there are five priests who served in my parish, and I knew them. They were my parents' friends. And one of them, you know, there were rumors. We all knew, don't go around this guy. But the others, you know, there's a little bit of earth-shaking, I think, for people for whom some of these names will come as a big surprise. How do you address for parishioners, for Catholics in Vermont, and for others who may have to now sort of deal with this question of, these are people I thought I knew, and I feel really shaken by this. You know, how do you deal with this on Sunday?
I think, well, I know that a number of places have already, especially the ones that are listed, have already said that they're going to offer, they're going to confront it this weekend. I know that in one place they're actually having a meeting next Tuesday to talk about this, already scheduled. Those things will have to be done. Sadly, I think the ability of disclosures like this to scandalize the vast majority of adult Catholics is not that much of a deal anymore, because sadly they've been having to deal with it now for the past 12 to 15 years. And yes, there's names on there that they didn't know about, but I think it's a sad shrug of the shoulders and say, you just don't know anymore, you know, and all we can do is just be as honest as we can.
John, did you want to add something?
The fact that in terms of the family secret that the bishop has talked about, Edward Foster was in our home for celebrations. It was not uncommon for me to see him sitting in our home drinking a scotch and smoking a cigarette and conversing with my aunts and uncles. He went to deer camp with one of my uncles every year. So I guess for me, it's important to have this out in the open.
John Mahoney, can I ask you a couple more procedural questions? You don't reveal in this report any details about the accusations, like times, dates, locations. You certainly don't reveal victims' names. But you also don't reveal how many credible accusations there were against each of the priests. Why not? Why not reveal that?
We determined that our standard was going to be if there had been one allegation, and that's what we were going from. And one allegation was enough, And so we decided that we wouldn't indicate how many accusations there might have been.
And your standard is different from a legal standard, a criminal legal standard. So this is not you're not trying to be the police here.
Absolutely not.
And in terms of the names, Bishop Coyne mentioned that in many cases there will be accusations that this is not a complete list. And in fact, it's not. I read that there were 52 accusations that or 52 names that had come up, but you only reveal 40. So there were names that you either couldn't corroborate or what determined whether you named an individual or not?
I think you've indicated what the standard was. And so for 40, they met the standard, and for the others, they didn't.
Bishop Coyne, in some of the – so in this report, you have the name of the priest. You have where he was born. You have information on where he served, and then also whether or not he died. And in some – many of the cases, there are words like these priests had their faculties revoked or withdrawn. And in some cases, they were laicized by the Pope. Can you explain what those terms actually mean?
Sure. Faculties withdrawn means basically that they cannot present themselves with a collar as a priest. They cannot do public ministry. They can't celebrate Mass. They can't do anything. So basically, they while they're still a priest, technically they can't function in any way, shape, or form as a priest. Laicization, which is a word that some people find kind of offensive because it's almost like saying, well, they've been reduced down to the state of 99% of the rest of the church. But it basically means that not only do they have their faculties removed, but they are basically completely stripped of any ability to ever function as a priest again. And it's a public act of the church that requires a statement from the diocesan bishop to say that Father Smith has been laicized as of this date. And so people know after the procedure that, in fact, this priest can no longer be serving as a priest. The issue in many ways is problematic because what happens is once a guy has his faculties revoked or he's laicized, even if he's laicized, he's free to go wherever he wants. And none of these guys were found guilty. Well, two were, but the rest of them weren't found guilty of any kind of criminal action. So they're not on any list. Now, when a guy moves to another place, we always try and inform the local bishop that one of our former priests is now living in his diocese and cannot function as a priest and that he has an allegation against him. But we can't go to law enforcement because there's no legal basis for us to do so because they were never found guilty. So they can't go on an offender list. So it gets difficult.
And in many cases, these priests did move around to other parishes inside and outside of Vermont even after an accusation. And so presumably the next parish wasn't told that there had been an allegation. This is before priests were either laicized or had their faculties
right.
revoked.
I mean, before 2000, even before 1990, actually. But prior to that, yeah, guys were moved around. We had one case in all this where the priest was guilty of abusing children in two other states, came to Vermont, abused them, and then left. And that was one of the worst cases that are listed there.
Yeah, I mean, for many of the priests, they were able to serve until their death or until their retirement, fully embraced at least officially in terms of their standing by the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and then sadly, there are some names on there of priests who have been deceased, who the family had no idea that they had an allegation against them until this list was published, and that the families were informed as much as we could ahead of time. And in a couple of cases, the family's very upset, saying, you know, how can you say this about our uncle? He was such a great guy. Where are you basing this on? Why are you publishing this? He's dead now. And they have real true feelings, and I think they have a strong case to raise in this matter as to why we're doing it. And I think while the fact that the dead cannot speak for themselves nor receive justice in that case, in these matters, the fact of the matter is that there is substantiated, credible allegation there, and that's why their name is on the list.
John Mahoney, in terms of the priests who are still living, what consideration was given to them and their families, and do they deserve to have been given forewarnings that their name is going to be publicly released?
Well, I believe that was up to the bishop. Once we had given him our list, I think he was he and others at the diocesan offices were going to be informing individuals.
What's your perspective on that?
I think it was appropriate, I suppose, that they were informed that their names were going to be on the list. But I think it's appropriate that their names are made public also.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking with Bishop Christopher Coyne from the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington and with John Mahoney, one of the members of a 7-person lay committee that worked independently of the diocese to comb through records to find allegations of sex abuse by priests. The names of 40 priests accused of sexual abuse were revealed today. None are still serving as priests, and all but one of the allegations is more than 20 years old. But the statute of limitations on civil claims for child sex abuse no longer expires in Vermont, and these names and the parish connections can trigger both strong feelings as well as the potential for more accusations. John Mahoney, you write in releasing your findings, and I'll quote from the introduction here, "What is particularly painful is knowing how lives were changed irreparably by what happened to the victims when they were young. For some, there might have been the opportunity for healing, but for many, there may have been a series of life choices intended to cover scars that only resulted in more pain and disappointment. Lives have been lost because of the abuse that occurred," end quote. That is, of course, particularly painful, and it wasn't your charge to reflect on that in your investigation, but you couldn't have avoided it as you look through these records, as you think about the priests, as the committee goes through these records that reveal the incredible pain that people would have suffered at the hands of these priests. So how did the committee process that as you moved through this work?
It was, I think, extremely challenging. And there was one individual on the committee who once said, we should hope that we have the grace to forget what we've seen. And, you know, there are any number of people who in their life's work have to be aware of trauma that people have suffered. So, you know, it was difficult to process it. But I think there was also comfort knowing that my eyes weren't the only eyes looking at these files, that there were other people, and we were going through this experience together.
How did you think about your own trauma and your own past? You're a victim of sexual abuse by a priest. Was this work cathartic, painful? I mean, how did you deal with it?
I think what was especially difficult was there were names of victims and names of priests in the files that I hadn't anticipated. So I think that probably was the hardest part for me.
Names of victims, you mean names you knew?
Names of people I knew.
Let's go to Dennis O'Brien, who's chair of the steering committee of the Concerned Catholics of Vermont, who's with us on the line now. Dennis, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Shane. This revelation, of course, just came out today, so I can't claim that I'm speaking for all of the membership of CCOVT. We will be checking with them. But I do believe that what's been done so far confirms what we've hoped the bishop would bring to this, which is transparency, responsibility, and resolution of these traumas as far as humanly possible. From what we've heard so far, it's clear that the traumas will not be easily resolved or probably brought to closure. This is painful for everybody, the priests involved, the victims, even the people who had to do the review, and certainly for the bishops and most Catholics. I'd like to comment, if I can, for just a second on how I think the majority of our members think about the whole sexual abuse issue. For most of us, we think of it as a triple tragedy. First of all, it's a terrible tragedy of the victims who were involved, and that is the primary one that we have to recognize. Second is the trauma, the tragedy to the church itself, because it has prevented the church from being, because of the the concentration on the sexual issue, which is always very important for people, it has damaged seriously the church's ability to talk and have moral and spiritual influence within its membership and within the wider community about a whole range of issues that should be taken up. And the third really goes to our current issue at CCOVT, which are support of Pope Francis's view of the American church, of the church in general, and particularly the American Catholic Church. Very briefly, when Francis was first inaugurated as Pope, installed as Pope, one of the things he said that the church has got to stop obsessing about abortion, artificial contraception, homosexuality, and sexual issues in general. And because that's a choice that the church itself has made in the United States to be very much upfront on issues, which are very serious moral issues, all of those. But nevertheless, it means that it's taken up all this oxygen in the room so that issues which are very important to the church, Pope Francis's major encyclical on the dangers of climate change, John Paul II and Benedict XVI on the political failure of countries around the world to deal with poverty, the immediate issues which the Pope has commented on about refugees and migrants, the question about the death penalty, which has been gradually eased out of possibility by the last three popes. So the extent that Bishop Coyne's efforts dealing directly with sexual abuse can bring some sort of healing and closure to this whole sexual side of issues in the church, I think it's laudable. But what I hope is that finally it will allow the church's voice to turn to these other issues of the economy, the migrant crisis, race relations, and so forth. Get out from under the sexual abuse, which did happen, no question about it. There's still going to be suffering. There'll be suffering for a long time. As the bishop has said, can we eliminate that from the church? It's not humanly possible to do that, but they can do everything they can to try to, and I think they have done that. But somehow or other, we've got to get out from underneath the issues which have been so in the forefront, both because of the newspapers have brought this up and also partly because the church officials often have brought these other issues, abortion, contraception, homosexual issues, and so forth, to the fore, to the point where we just don't hear about things which are terribly important to the church beyond that range of issues. So that, I think that's the comment that our membership would want to make at this point. But we have great sympathy for both what the bishop has done and great admiration for Mr. Mahoney for going through the review. Thank you.
That's Dennis O'Brien, chair of the steering committee of the Concerned Catholics of Vermont. Dennis, thanks very much for sharing your perspective with us. And Bishop Coyne, what do you think about what Dennis had to say?
I think Dennis has a very valid point about where the lens of focus within the bishops of the United States has been. And I think part of this, these things dealing with the abuse of children by priests is that the story is a continuing story. You know, I didn't write the BuzzFeed story, which came out about the orphanage last fall. It was a rewriting of a story that broke in 1992-93, but it was breathlessly told as if it was something new.
It was unfamiliar to many people. I mean, it may not have been a new story, but for many people, it brought it to the fore, sure, in a way that certainly hadn't been on their mind before.
Yeah.
And this is again about St. Joseph's.
Yeah, but then what happens is I have to respond to it. So a lot of times there are so many things outside of what we can do here in the diocese that's outside of our control. So the Cardinal McCarrick, who was a very high churchman in the United States, who was accused of molesting children and seminarians, that's out of my control. Those things break. The Pennsylvania story, that's out of our control. We have to respond to it. But Dennis does have a point. You know, we're constantly dealing with this issue, and it doesn't allow us to deal with other important issues like immigration and refugees and climate control and poverty and the opioid crisis, you know, which our churches in Vermont are trying to address and doing the best they can as well as everybody else.
We got a note from CM who says, I had terrifying encounters with two of the priests on the list stemming from 1974 to 1978, starting as a 10-year-old altar boy in St. Augustine's in Montpelier. It's been an untold known fact that these were known child predators, but being a child back then, we spoke about it, but no one would listen. And CM asks, are there any suits pending for any of these? And, you know, one of the potential results of a list like this where the names are made public is that there could be civil suits, there could be criminal suits, criminal cases that emerge from these. There could be other victims that come forward who hadn't been public before, who had never made an accusation. What do you think, Bishop Coyne, are the likely fallouts from this report in that on that kind of side of things?
I gave a copy of this report to T.J. Donovan's office, State Attorney General's office, on Monday, so they've had the list of names. So questions as to criminality, I leave it up to law enforcement.
Well, and in fact, I'll just stop you there to insert that SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, did put out a statement this morning where they say that now that this list has been released, if Bishop Coyne wants to show his message of transparency and openness is sincere, he should ask for an independent investigation from Vermont Attorney General T.J. Donovan into the diocese's handling of sex crimes and cover-ups.
Oh, they're doing it already. They've been doing it in conjunction with the work that they're doing with the orphanage, but T.J. Donovan and others are already doing exactly what SNAP is asking for, and we're cooperating completely. They've been in and out of our building. We've been handing over files. They have all the files that we have for the that the committee had. They said they were missing one. It was a small file involving a religious order priest, and that's being rectified. But they have it, so they're doing it. It's part of the label, I guess. I'm not laughing at this situation. It's just it's what I'm dealing with.
Do you expect there to be more civil cases filed? I mean, Vermont's statute of limitations on civil cases was removed. It was 6 years. Now there is no statute of limitations.
We have six right now that were filed back at the end of June, beginning of July,
when the law changed.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that there won't be many more as a result of this list. That's my hope.
Hope because you hope there are no more cases, or hope because you don't have the money for
it? Both. I'm hoping that we know that there's not a lot of victims out there that we weren't aware of, that suddenly we're going to find out there were a lot more people who were hurt. But the Diocese of Burlington doesn't have insurance for these cases and doesn't have money. So I don't know. I've tried to settle the cases that I've received up till nine. I have settled all the cases that have been come across my desks in the last 4 years. So we haven't gone to litigation, but I have no idea where this is going to go.
Can you give us a ballpark figure of the dollar amount for the total of those settlements?
Close to $1 million. And that's $1 million that just keeps draining the bank account. All the other funds we have are restricted by donor intent. They really can't be touched. And they're also in parishes, and they have their own not-for-profit status. So there's just not a lot of money there. But since there's no term on when people can make these claims, I'm struck with how to respond to it, because we could settle 10 cases and say, okay, we're done, and say, well, we'll use the last $1 million that we have and settle these cases, and then suddenly there's two more cases and we don't have anything. So I don't know whether we're going to have to go to litigation so as to be able to go to appeal the law. We don't know what we're doing.
John Mahoney, your committee, the committee says in its report, you acknowledge that this may that the revelation of these names may make more people come forward. And in fact, you encourage people who are victims of sexual abuse by priests or others to come forward and to share that with appropriate people to be able to get help in whatever form that takes. Do you expect, and do you not hope for, but think it would be a good outcome if more people came forward and if there were, in fact, maybe more civil cases or criminal cases?
I can't speak to civil or criminal cases, but I think people coming forward, even reaching out to a spouse or a loved one, if they hadn't had the chance to share their story, coming forward is very important and can be positive towards moving forward.
John, your sister Margaret from Charlotte is calling in. Margaret, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. The main purpose of this call is to express my utmost thanks, love, and respect for John. For us as a family, this has been a long family story. And I just also want to mention, as John just alluded to, there are family members, there are spouses, there are siblings, there are children, there are close friends who are all experiencing some of the pain of these people, which hopefully in some way is helping them in their journey. And although I want to say that, you know, this is going to bring some resolution, I think Dennis O'Brien might have missed the mark a little bit. He has priorities. I agree with all those priorities. But today isn't a day for those priorities. Today is a day for all of us to try to move forward, support one another, and thank the people who have worked so hard for so many years, who so often got the door shut, the email closed, the answers not answered, or the questions not answered. I think today we just need to try to support all those people. And as John just mentioned, really encourage others to share their experiences, not in the case of wanting litigation, but in the case of wanting to be open, honest, truthful, and gain the love and support they all should have. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Margaret, thanks for calling in. John, any thoughts?
Thanks, Peggy.
Let's go to Rick, who's calling in from South Burlington. Rick, hi.
Good morning. I just wanted to make 2 points. First, I wanted to really support the bishop for taking the leadership action that allows us to dig into a just result. And it isn't happening uniformly across the country, as we all know, and so we need to support that kind of leadership. But it applies much more broadly to a variety of situations. In the law, there is a conflict between achieving justice and the legal code of ethics that attorneys are required to follow that requires them to always do what is helping in the very best interest of their client. And in the case of our local diocese, the attorneys in the past have interpreted that to be the way we all know, and that has to move in ways that limited bringing this issue to light. And that does not always line up in situations like this with achieving justice for the people who have been wronged. And broadly within the legal profession, this is beginning to be very much debated, because you can often use superior resources to browbeat, in litigation, somebody who has been wronged but doesn't have the power to fight back with you. And you achieve a result in favor of your client, but it is not necessarily achieving justice. And that goes on and is being debated. So thanks again, Bishop.
Rick, thanks for your comments. And, you know, Rick talking here about how lawyers are thinking about this and what the responsibility is of attorneys, even ones who are representing the church. Bishop Coyne, you mentioned, and you've mentioned before, one of your aims and the aims of the Catholic Church, the stated aim, is to make sure this never, ever, ever happens again. But how do you make sure that?
Can't make it humanly completely possible. There's always the potential for sin and abuse, but just continue to maintain the all the procedures and policies that we put in place now.
And are people who have accusations, do you take those to law enforcement?
Yes. Any accusation that comes in, the first thing we say is you have to go to law enforcement. And if you don't, we have to, because we're mandatory reporters.
Bishop Christopher Coyne is the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington. John Mahoney is a member of the lay committee charged with identifying priests who are believed to have abused children during their time serving in Vermont parishes or who have a connection to Vermont. We have a link to the full report at vpr.org. It came out this morning. Thanks to both of you for being here today to discuss the work.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.